Yesterday, we spoke about the Ibn Ezra and Rashi's understanding of Pshat, and I would like to continue, although it's off on a tangent a little bit from the Gemara, but continue with some more observations about Pshat versus Drash. What is Pshat? I'd like to start with an Ibn Ezra that actually came across yesterday, Parshas Bo. It's a little bit surprising after Ibn Ezra told us what the basis of his Torah commentary will be, so I thought it was interesting to mention. The Pasuk says, Korban Pesach should be eaten with matzah and maror. So the Ibn Ezra says, Al merorim yochaluhu. Amar echad mechachmei Sfarad. One of the wise men of Spain said, why do we eat maror? Yadua ki alecha tigbar be'eretz Yisrael bavur mimei hayor. Egypt is a very humid place because of all the humidity coming off of the Nile. Bavur shlo yired sham geshem, because it doesn't rain there. Ki avir hu lach tamid. So the air is always moist. I assume he means around the Nile, there's constant evaporation and it doesn't have anywhere to go. I'm not sure exactly what phenomenon. He was in Egypt. I've never been there. I'm not sure exactly what he means. But he said, therefore, they always ate bitter grasses and mustard. Even if he had only bread to eat, Lolam hamirurim yu al shulchanoli bo hapat. He always had bitter things to dip his bread in. Kihem refu'a laviram. This was a cure for their bad air, their extra humid air. And so this Pad mechachmei Sfarad, one of the wise men of Spain, seems to be suggesting the reason we eat maror is because that's what people ate in Egypt, and we commemorate that. And Ibn Ezra continues, "Va'anachnu, but as for us, nismoch al dat kadmonenu zichronam libracha, we will rely on the opinion of those who came before us. Shepershu lanu ki amorim zecher levayemaru et chayehem, who said that eating maror is a reminder of the bitterness of Egypt. We might have expected the Ibn Ezra just to say to like the first pshat, because it seems more like pshat, but he doesn't. He rejects that and says, we're happy with what Chazal had to say, which is that the maror is commemoration of bitterness. So I thought that was interesting and something you can store away and say at your Seder. But that really is not so surprising. So yesterday, Ibn Ezra said that I'm always going to tell you the pshat except where it affects halacha. If it affects halacha, I'm obviously going to go with Chazal. And that might explain the Ibn Ezra about the maror. When we eat the maror, we have to know why we're eating the maror. If Chazal gave us a reason that we're eating the maror because the Egyptians embittered our lives, so we need to know what kavana to have, what intention to have when we eat the maror, and therefore he has to deviate from the pshat and go with Chazal. I mentioned before the concept of pshat and the drash being different perspectives on the same event. In the context of before Purim, I mentioned in the context of the Jewish people saying Nasa v'nishma, and yet the Medrash says, based on Pasuk Tehillim, that they were already deep inside, already planning to stray. They probably didn't know they were going to make the Egel, but the seeds of the Egel were already there when they said Nasa Nishma. And I quoted a contemporary, Blade Mintzberg, who said that that's Pshat and Drash. Pshat is what you would have seen if you had been there. And Drash is what's going on beneath the surface. This idea, in fact, I may have said at the time, comes from Maral. Maral says, this is in Gvuros Hashem, chapter 17, on the Pasuk, Vatered bat paro lechotzalei or, the daughter of Paro came down to wash on the Nile, v'narotehu chot al svatei or, and her maidens or maidservants were going on the bank of the Nile. Chazal say, where were they going? They were going to their death. Maral says, why did they say that? Because they were bothered by, why mention their maidservants at all? How's it relevant to the story? Who cares if they were going? What does that have to do with anything? The daughter Paro went down to wash in the Nile. She saw a baby. She took the baby home. That's what I need to know. Why do I need to know about these maidservants? So Maral, yes.
I thought in the past that maybe it's mentioned because to show that she wasn't afraid of what the maidservants were going to say.
Could be. That's not an obvious answer, but Could be. Chazal say that the maidservants were going to their death. Maral explains, so doesn't tell us why do we care. I'll explain that in a second. But he also addresses, what would you have seen if you had been there? He says that death is called going. Person is holech b'derech kol ha'aretz. David Melech says, I'm going in the way of the world. I'm going to die. So we see that going is a reference to death. Furthermore, there's a remez. You know, one of the four ways of interpreting the Torah, pshat, remez, drash, sod. So a hint that holchot is written without a vav, and the gematria of holchot without a vav is equal to the gematria of mita, of death. But this doesn't mean physical death. It doesn't mean they drop dead. It means that something inside of them, on a spiritual level, some aspect of their souls was taken away. They lost the ability to be opponents of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Egyptians were, on a spiritual level, the opponents of Moshe Rabbeinu. They wanted to stop Moshe Rabbeinu from being born, from growing up, from accomplishing his mission. These Egyptian maidservants lost their ability to oppose Moshe. That is a form of death. Maral says the reason it doesn't say explicitly in the pasuk that they died is because if you had been there, you would never have seen that they died. They didn't die. They continued to walk around. They went home. They continued their lives. But something died. Something in them died that day. Some aspect of them. Rav Huttner, Pachad Yitzchak.
We're applying that same concept to the maidservants.
Specifically.
Something about the
maidservants. Something in their spiritual nature, which was representative of the Egyptians' opposition to Moshe, died that day and enabled Bas Paro to take Moshe home and raise him. Because otherwise it would have been impossible, because Moshe Rabbeinu and the Egyptians are completely diametrical forces. How could an Egyptian woman raise Moshe Rabbeinu in her house? Because something in the Egyptians, in the maidservants, some spiritual aspect of them died.
Space, so to speak.
You could put it that way, I guess. That's the Maral is explaining. Rav Huttner, in Pachad Yitzchak, Pesach, Essay Nunbet, Mamar Nunbet, he elaborates on this Maral. He says that part of our difficulty in understanding Torah is that we use the same words for Torah purposes and everyday purposes. So you have secrets. If I whisper something to you and tell you not to tell anyone, it's a secret. Actually, halacha is that if I tell you something, it's a secret, unless I tell you that it's not a secret. People, and we learn that from this week's parsha. Vayikra el Moshe, vayidaber lemor. Hashem told, why does it always say Hashem told Moshe lemor, to say? Chazal learned from there that you're not allowed to repeat something unless you're told to say. People think, he didn't tell me it's a secret. That's not the Jewish viewpoint. The Jewish viewpoint is it's always a secret until you're told it's not a secret. But in any event, if I tell you what I just told you, I said it out loud, I said it, it's being recorded, it's not a secret. If I had turned off the recorder and whispered it to you, it would be a secret. There's no difference between the words that I said and the meaning that they have, whether I said it out loud or whether I said it as a secret. That's the everyday view. But in the Torah, Rav Huttner says, the Maral is teaching us that the idea of pshat versus sod is something completely different. They are pshat and remez and drash and sod. They're not just four ways of saying the same thing. They're four completely different ideas. So the pshat of the pasuk is that the maidservants were walking on the bank of the Nile. And they were. That was true. The sod, the hint, as well as the secret, is a completely different level of reality where they were holchot, meaning they died. It's describing a completely different reality. We say that Hashem looked in the world, as Rav Huttner says, he looked in the Torah and created the world. That means that all, we say, Shivim Panim LaTorah, there are 70 aspects to the Torah. That means that all 70 aspects of the Torah have some expression in reality, in 70 different aspects of reality. The Pshat is revealed in the world of Pshat, and the Sod is revealed in the world of Sod. And he uses this to explain, and this will make the idea a little more understandable, too, I think, to explain two perplexing Chazals, one of which is also Pesach-related. Chazals say that before the Jewish people sang Shira on the Yam Suf, no one had ever sung Shira before. No one had ever sang praises of Hashem before. Seems to contradict another Chazal, that other Marishon said, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShavas. Adam Rishon met Cain and said, what did God do to you? And Cain said, I did tshuva and I was forgiven. And Adam Rishon said, Mizmor Shir Liyom HaShavas. Now, what that whole medrash means is a different discussion, but were the Jewish people at the Yam Suf the first ones to sing Shira, or was Adam Rishon the first one to say Shira? The answer is that in Pshat, the Jewish people, the Yam Suf, were the first ones to sing Shira. The first time anybody could have seen somebody sing Shira was at the Yam Suf. Adam Rishon sang Shira on a level of drash, meaning somewhere deep inside his soul, not on a level of pshat. Doesn't say anywhere in the Torah that Adam Rishon sang Shira. No one could have possibly have seen it. Cain didn't see it. That's what he's saying. Cain was there, but he didn't see it either. It was somewhere deep inside Adam Rishon. On a level of drash, Adam Rishon sang Shira. He explains as well, Gemara that we also mentioned not too long ago, Yaakov Avinu lo meis. Yaakov Avinu didn't die. The Gemara says, why was he embalmed and eulogized? The Gemara answers, Mikrani Doresh, I'm darshaning a pasuk. How does that answer the question? You're saying he didn't die, so you're darshaning from a pasuk that he didn't die. Very nice, but why was he eulogized and why was he embalmed? The answer is, Mikra ani doresh. I'm telling you a drasha. Of course, on a physical level, Yaakov died. Yaakov was eulogized, Yaakov was embalmed, Yaakov was buried. The physical Yaakov died. But on there's a level of drush where Yaakov never died. It's a different reality. Different levels of Torah interpretation are teaching us different levels of reality. That is Rav Huttner's explanation of this maral. I'm not sure everyone would agree with that. The Shiurei Das of Rav Yosef Leib Bloch, the Telzer Rav, Telzer Rosh Hashiva, there's a piece about Migdal Bavel, and there he shows, using the Migdal Bavel as an illustration, how Shat and Remez and Drash and Sod are all saying, they're actually all saying the same thing. I haven't looked at that piece in depth lately to try to figure out whether he's disagreeing with this idea or whether it could be consistent. While on the Maral and Pesach, just a point about understanding Drash, Agadah in general. Everyone's familiar with the Gemara that in Egypt, women had 6 children in every birth. There's a Gemara that says that women had 60 children in every birth. Maral says, don't think for a second that that's meant to be taken literally. If a woman would have 60 children at one time, each would be so small, it would not possibly be viable, the Maral says. This is what it means. He's saying it's about the 60. What does it mean? It means usually after a woman gives birth, she feels weak for a while. It takes time to recover. Particularly if a woman would have sextuplets, she would feel weak and take a little bit of time to recover. In Egypt, after the women gave birth, they immediately felt so good and so strong. It was as if, wow, I could have had 60 babies and I never would have felt any different. Gemara is making a comment about the strength of the women and how the women felt after giving birth. Maral says, don't think for a second that the women, that the Gemara is suggesting women actually had 60 babies at a time. Such a thing is absolutely impossible in our world. It's a little bit of an aside, although it does shed light on proper understanding of Agadata. There is a Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samach Gimel Amud Aleph. Amar Rav Kahana. Rav Kahana said, Kad Havena Bar Tamnei Srei Shnin, at the time of the discussion that's takes place there in the Gemara, which I'll tell you in a second what it was. I was 18 years old. Bavi gemirna le lakula hashas. I had already learned all of shas. Lo have yadana de ein mikrayu tsemi de pshuto. I never knew that pasuk never departs from its pshat. The famous expression we've heard many times: ein mikrayu tsemi de pshuto. Pasuk doesn't depart from its pshat. There's a drasha, but pasuk also has a pshat. Rav Kana says, I was 18 years old. I'd finished all of shas. I never knew ein mikrayu tsemi de pshuto. Some take that very literally. The Satmar Rebbe, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Not that everyone else I quote isn't also Zecher Tzadik Livracha, but here I want to emphasize it. Sefer Vayol Moshe, Mamar Loshon HaKodesh, page Tuf Yud Zayin. It's Mamar Loshon HaKodesh of the Satmar Rebbe. He is arguing against speaking Hebrew for everyday use, and we know there are many people who don't speak Hebrew in everyday use. He has various reasons why he doesn't want Hebrew to be spoken. So he brings this Gemara. I'm not speaking Hebrew. Yeah. I gave a shiur once in another city about, is there a mitzvah to speak Hebrew? Lashon HaKodesh. Is there a mitzvah to speak Lashon HaKodesh? And I quoted extensively from this source, but made a point not mentioning that I was quoting the Satmar Rebbe. I just said, Sefer called Vayoa Moshe. I thought it would be a distraction to mention the Satmar Rebbe. Somebody in the audience all of a sudden says, that's the Satmar Rebbe. So I then had to digress and spend 5 minutes explaining the greatness of the Satmar Rebbe. We don't happen to agree with his viewpoint about Zionism and the State of Israel. Overwhelming majority of Gdolim did not agree with him, but that doesn't detract from his greatness. In this audience, I figured it was safe to mention his name. In any event, he says that why did Rav Kahana not know when he was 18 years old and he had learned all of Shas that Pasuk doesn't depart from its Pshat? Because they didn't teach Tanakh straight to children in those days. And the reason they didn't was because if they had, the children might have learned Hebrew. And they didn't want the children to learn Hebrew because speaking Hebrew is a bad thing for all the reasons that he explains in this long essay, which is not our topic now. Therefore, they first taught children Tanakh based on Midrashim, which is the way a lot of our schools do it now too, before ever teaching Pshat. And that's why Rav Kahana, when he was 18 years old, didn't know Pshat. That is the Satmar Rebbe's interpretation. Needless to say, there are other interpretations. Rav Reuven Margolios explains that Gemara in Shabbos as follows. The discussion there in the Gemara is it permitted to wear a sword on Shabbos? Rabbi Eliezer says that a sword is an ornament. Why? Because the Pasuk says, Chagor charbacha al yarech gibor hodcha v'hadarcha. Wear a sword on your thigh, gibor, a strong one. It is your glory and your beauty. Your beauty and your glory. So Rav Kahana said to Mar Braid Ravina, that pasuk is not talking about a sword. That pasuk is talking about Torah. Wear your Torah, we would say, wear your Torah on your sleeve, so to speak. That's your glory, your Torah. And Mar Braid Ravina answered him, even so, ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. The pasuk has a pshat. So Rav Reuven Margolios explains, many pasukim are parables. And when Chazal use something as a parable, for example, they use a brave man wearing a sword as a parable for a Torah scholar wearing his Torah as an ornament, as a weapon. We're only interested in the nimshal, in the meaning behind the parable. The parable itself has no meaning. And that is the pshat. The nimshal, the thing that the parable is alluding to, is the pshat. In fact, there's another Gemara, Pashti Dekrab B'Talmud HaYoshev Fnei Rabo, Talmid HaYoshev Fnei Rabo. The pshat of the pasuk is referring to a Talmud sitting in front of his Rebbe. So when the Gemara says that's the pshat, the Gemara seems to be saying, we're only interested in the nimshal, in what the mashal is alluding to. And what Mar Braid Ravina taught Rav Kahana is, no, even so, the pshat has meaning. The mashal has meaning. And if the Chachamim use a brave man wearing a sword as a mashal for learning Torah, it must be that the brave man wearing the sword is also something praiseworthy. That's why Rabbi Eliezer learns that the sword is an ornament. And that's what Rav Kahana meant when he said, I never knew that psukim also have a pshat. Of course he knew the psukim have a pshat. He meant, I never knew that when there's a drasha that gives a new pshat. Now, some drushos are clearly drushos. They're clearly not the pshat. But some drushos, like this one, I could have thought that's the pshat. I could have thought that I'm only interested in the nimshal. I don't care about the mashal. Then I learned that the mashal also has meaning. That is how he explains, Amy, how Rav Reuven Margolyos explains Rav Kahana's statement, I never knew that Amy Yitzsei Day Pshuto. Rav Yaakov Tzvi Mecklenburg, I mentioned yesterday in the Torah commentary, Haksava Kabbalah, Dvarim Per Chavdalet, Pasuk Yud Zayin, on the Pasuk, Lo Yumtu Avot Albanim, fathers will not die Albanim, Ish Becheto Yumat, person will die because of his own sin. So Gemara says, Avot, Lo Yumtu Avot Albanim, means Be'edut Banim, sons may not testify against their fathers. And if you think it means that fathers will not die for the sins of their fathers, it already says, each person will die for his sin. So I don't need a pasuk to tell me fathers won't die for the sins of their children. Therefore, the pasuk must mean fathers should not die based on the testimony of their children. So Ksava Kabbalah quotes of Azariah Mipano in Sefer Asarim Amaros, who says that even so, Loyum Tu Avot Avanim has a literal meaning, fathers will not die for the sins of their children. And he brings a proof from Divrei Hayamim, where it says that the king of Yehuda, Amatziah, killed those who had killed his father and did not kill their children. Kakatuv b'Torat Moshe, as it says in the Torah of Moshe, Loyum Tu Avot Avanim, fathers should not die for their children, for the sins of their children. Now, the Gemara darshaned, Lo Yumtu Avot Avanim, fathers should not die by the testimony of their children. And yet in Divrei Hayamim, that very same pasuk is quoted to say that he did not kill the children because of the fathers. So you see that the pshat remains. The Haksava Kabbalah says, that's actually not a good proof. If you look in the context of the psukim there, Divrei Hayamim, you'll see it's not a good proof. However, the principle remains correct, that wherever the pshat doesn't contradict the drasha, then we say Ein Mikra Yotzei Midei Pshuto. They're both true. The pshat is true, and the drasha is true. They're simply teaching us two different things. If the drasha would contradict the pshat, and they cannot both be true, then we would have to leave aside what we think is the pshat and go with the drasha of Chazal. That is how the Ksava Kabbalah explains. And one commentator who was not shy about telling you what he thinks is a pshat, even when it's directly contrary to Chazal, the Abarbanel. Although the Abarbanel is recognized by many as one of the greatest Torah commentators, there actually are yeshivas that have banned the Abarbanel because of not only the type of things I'm going to tell you, but probably the two specific things I'm going to tell you. Gemara in Bava Basra says that Yoshua wrote Sefer Yoshua. The Abarbanel says, Kasher Yanti B'Psukim, when I looked in the Psukim, I saw that this idea that Yeshua wrote Yeshua is very far-fetched. Among other reasons, because it says in Sefer Yeshua that something was the way it was ad hayom hazeh, until this day. If Yeshua wrote Sefer Yeshua within a few years after the event being referred to, what's the big deal? It was the way it was until this day. So therefore, the Barbanel says, Gemara says that Yeshua wrote Yeshua, but also we know the Gemara says that anyone who says, Gemara in Shabbos says, anyone who says that David HaMelech sinned with Bathsheba is mistaken. We learned Daf Yomi together, and I'm sure at the time we did that Gemara, quote Mefarshim like Demichtav Eliyahu, who says that it means anyone who says that David HaMelech sinned in the literal sense of the sin described there is mistaken. Can't say David HaMelech didn't sin. David HaMelech said, Chatati, I sinned. Means David HaMelech did not commit adultery. David HaMelech did not commit murder, the way the Psukim seem to describe. Rabbanel says, this statement that David HaMelech didn't sin, explaining how David HaMelech didn't sin, it's a drasha. I have nothing to say about it. However, the Gemara itself says, he's not completely rejecting the Gemara. He says, Gemara himself says that Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, because he was a descendant of David HaMelech, tried to speak meritoriously of David HaMelech, implying that everyone else doesn't necessarily have to be Dan L'Chavzchus in the same way. It was something Rabbi Yehuda Anasi went out of his way to do about his ancestor David HaMelech. Interestingly, Abarbanel also was a descendant of David HaMelech, but he didn't feel the same urge to be done l'chavzchut. And he says that pshat of the psukim is clear. David HaMelech committed a grievous sin of adultery, followed by a cover-up, and so on. That is, those are two very controversial Abarbanels. But Tzadok HaKohen writes about the first Abarbanel, about who wrote Sefer Yehoshua. He writes in his Sefer Or Zoro Letzadik on page 50. It's weird that Abarbanel learned to talk like that. L'man harav kein mechachamim shekadmu k'rabi Avram ibn Ezra v'domav shenagu kacha. Says he learned it from commentaries like the Ibn Ezra, who also, Rav Tzadok says, took liberties with interpreting psukim contrary to Chazal. We saw yesterday Ibn Ezra explained why he does that. The Rav Tzadok says, "Aval kvar shakluhu lemitrof saihu migdolei hadorot." They've already been, we would say, dragged over the coals. Ra'iti sham v'sof rav hitnatzel zal v'zel shano rather ve'al titmal asher natiti. Midat Chazal, Kigam v'Gemara lo iskimu dream elav chalku sham im Moshe katav sefer Iyo v'im katav Yeshua chepsukim haTorah. Abarbanel says, don't be surprised that I question that Gemara that Yeshua wrote Yeshua. That very same Gemara in Bava Basra questions who wrote sefer Iyo. It questions who wrote the last eight psukim in the Torah. So you see, Chazal themselves weren't sure who wrote some of the books of Tanakh. So the Barbanel, so Rav Tzadok says, "Vezok hashay yoter." This is even worse. V'chi chavruta nami ki b'shul shnechku zichunam l'chav mitzat ma'amar asher gam b'zeh hayaroui lo liram migeshet lachriya v'nihem shema yarutzu v'chulei. I think the missing word is kod kodo. Chazal had a question: who wrote Sefer Iyov? Let's say the Barbanel is going to decide the machlokas Chazal. And he's going to say, if they argued, I can argue. There's machlokes in the Gemara, so I can have an opinion too. Chazal would have smashed his head in. That's what Rav Tzadok says. There's no machlokes in the Gemara about who wrote Sefer Yehoshua. Hashem yichaper bado. May Hashem forgive him. You see, as strongly as he speaks against the Abarbanel, A, he read the Abarbanel, and B, he says, may Hashem forgive him. It shows the proper respect that one has to have, even when we read a Rambam and we don't like it because it's based on Aristotle, or even when we read an Abarbanel and we don't like it because it's contrary to Chazal, see the respect with which one has to speak of these Gedolim.
So he says,
Abarbanel is not a Rishon. I said Gedolim, I didn't say Rishon.
Right, so
only cannot argue with a Rishon when it comes to Halacha. When it comes to explaining a Pasuk, as long as it's not apikorsis, you're entitled to argue
philosophy
and explain.
You argue.
Philosophy, you can argue with a Rishon. It's only in Halacha that an Achron cannot argue with a Rishon. On rare occasions, we do find Achronim arguing with Rishonim, but in general, not. Just like Rishonim cannot argue with Gemara about Halacha. When it comes to Drush, that's exactly what this discussion is about. So Rav Tzadok says, "Umashinim tzaki ba'agadah harashut netunah lachlok al balei ha'tamud." That which we find that when it comes to Agadata, a person can argue with the Gemara. Zeum nam v'pirush eze katuv. That's referring to how to explain a pasuk. Ki shivim panim l'Torah. There are 70 faces to the Torah, 70 facets to the Torah. You want to explain a pasuk differently than Chazal explained it? By all means, go ahead. But not, God forbid, to directly contradict Chazal. If Chazal say Yeshua wrote Sefer Yeshua, God forbid, we don't have the authority to argue and say, no, I think someone else wrote Sefer Yeshua. If Chazal say a definitive statement like Uriah gave Batsheva a get, we can't argue with that. Lastly, what is Pshat? Rav Yerucham Lavovitz, Mashkiach Lemir, says in the introduction to Das Torah, volume 1, page 61, that's where the introduction starts, on page 61. He says that we have forgotten how to learn Chumash. And we think that Pshat means translating the words, explaining why this word comes after that word, and nothing more than that. And he says, nothing could be farther from learning even the pshat of pasuk. And he brings a proof from a Gemara. Gemara says, Vayelech, the pasuk in Shoftim rather, says, Vayelech Manoach acharei ishto. Manoach went after his wife. The Gemara, Brachos Samech Aleph, Amar Aleph says, Manoach, this is the father of Shimshon, was an Am Aretz. He even didn't learn a Pasuk. The Pasuk says that Rivka went after Eliezer. They went behind Eliezer. That's what the Gemara says. So Manoach didn't even know that the man is supposed to go in front of the woman. There's an Am Aretz. Where does it say in the Pasuk that a man is supposed to go in front of a woman and not behind a woman? Gemara says he didn't even know the Pasuk that Rivka went after Eliezer, not in front of Eliezer. So Rav Yerucham says that you see what it means to learn pshat. It's not just the translation of the words, but to understand the Pasuk so deeply that you can learn a halacha from it. Why does the Pasuk tell me that Rivka went after the man, after Eliezer? I'm supposed to learn a halacha from that, that the man should not walk behind a woman. It's not, by the way, to put down women that they should walk behind. It's an issue of tzias.
It's not a distinguishing factor, though, between Rivka was not Eliezer's wife. And
the Gemara actually gives a different distinguishing factor. Gemara says that you actually cannot necessarily prove from here that Manoach was an Am Aretz. His wife knew where she was going. Manoach said, show me the man, the prophet. He didn't realize it was an angel. He thought it was a prophet. Manoach said, show me the prophet. So he followed his wife to where the prophet was. So the Gemara says that you actually can't prove from here that Manoach was Am Aretz because his wife knew the way and he didn't know the way, so he had to go after her. Notwithstanding that, the Gemara is saying that because Manoach did not delve into the pshat of the pasuk that Rivka went after Eliezer, he's called an Am Aretz. That's called not even knowing the pshat of a pasuk. But it's a deeper understanding of pshat. And Rav Soloveitchik says something very similar. This is in Abraham's Journey, page 17. It says, when we study the Bible, we must be concerned about two things. We must understand the semantics of the word, and we must understand the spiritual message of the Bible. Quotes a medrash that says that there's no parsha in the Torah that does not contain an allusion to Tchias HaMesim. It says, in every parsha in the Torah, we can discover an article of faith implicitly contained in it. I think he's saying essentially the same idea. Incidentally, on the subject of walking behind women, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in Shailos and Shuvos Mincha Shlomo says this halacha might not apply nowadays. In the time of Tanakh, it was unusual for women to be outdoors. Today, when everywhere you go, it's virtually impossible not to walk behind a woman, and therefore this isser might not apply today. Waiting to get on the bus and there's a woman there. So he says that we don't need to worry about this isser.